Would you please open to 2 Corinthians chapter 12 again? What is God like to you? When you look at God and you think of how He treats you and thinks about you each day, what do you think? Is He like the Ayatollah in Iran with squinty eyebrows and a beard who severely waits to smash down all enemies? What kind of God do we have? I'd like to show you this morning in a very simple way. Very simple thing this morning, that He is a loving God and that He is sufficient for every stage, every age, every trial of our lives. That He is able in everything and in every situation to meet our needs. And chapter 12 of 2 Corinthians is a good place to start. We read that this morning, and the key verse I mentioned was verse 9. And He said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for My strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in My infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. I'd like to divide my message up into parts. One, I'd like to give a very simple and brief exposition of this portion, and then suggest to you ways that His grace can be sufficient for us. But to get the background of this, it's interesting. The verses 1 to 5 of this chapter, Paul talks about having had a vision or a revelation. He talks about having had a special message. In fact, he doesn't even know if he was in the body or out of the body. But he knows that he had been in the presence of God in a unique way. And he'd always kept that to himself. We don't read any other chapter in the Word of God where he ever expresses it and says what it was. In fact, outside of this chapter, we have no indication that he ever had this before. In the second part of this, verses 6 to 10, Paul talks about a thorn in the flesh or a particular thing that God was doing in his life as well as the enemy to keep him from being proud because of this revelation. The reason Paul writes this is because he was forced to. He wrote a first letter, and in that letter he really raked the saints over the cold. He really read the riot act to them in letter 1. And some of them didn't like it. And there were his enemies who were following him around. These enemies were people who could not understand pure grace. They were still tied to the law. And they were following him around. And what they did is when they got there, they said, look, the guy is nothing. He's a little sawed-off runt. He can't speak clearly. In fact, he's not even one of the boys. He doesn't even come from Jerusalem. And what in the world, by whose authority does he speak? And so Paul in his second letter tells them, I have credentials. Now my credentials may not be from the boys in Jerusalem, but I want you to know I have credentials. I have shown my credentials of being an apostle, and you yourself know what I accomplished among you. So Paul does a little bragging, a little boasting in chapter 11 and 12. And he keeps apologizing for it. As you read this portion, he keeps, well, I don't really want to boast, but, and he's embarrassed by it. But he feels, now is the time for me to tell them. What's interesting about it is he tells highs and lows. He not only speaks about the mountaintop experiences, but he speaks about a time of humiliation. At the end of chapter 11, and remember, these chapters run together. We've divided them. But this is all a thought pattern in Paul's thinking. In chapter 11, verse 32, he says, in Damascus, the governor under Artaeus, the king, kept the city of Damascus with a garrison, desirous to apprehend me. And through a window in a basket, I was let down by the wall and escaped his hands. Now, these were garbage baskets. They were let over the wall, down to the side of the wall so they could be collected. Now, I don't know if there was garbage in it at the time he went down the wall. I wouldn't imply that he was laying in the middle of all the rubble. But here's the great apostle, the man who turned the world upside down, getting out of a city in a garbage bucket, being let down. A very humiliating thing for a world-famous preacher. And then in the next chapter, after he just talked about a humiliating thing, he talks about this revelation that God gave to him. And he's very careful to lay down things about this revelation because he doesn't want them to misunderstand. In fact, he doesn't say what it was. He says in verse 4, the end of last part of verse 4, which is not lawful for a man to utter. Paul never spoke about it. He didn't share it. He felt for some reason that he must keep it to himself. And he says in verse 5, "A such a one will I glory, yet of myself I will not glory but in my infirmities." If you want me to speak, if you want me to brag, I'm going to spend more time talking about my weaknesses and my needs than my mountaintop experiences. I think this is interesting. G. Campbell Morgan, who is one of my favorite biblical expositors, wrote this about 40 years ago. A little while ago. I'm just going to be big 4-0 in a couple of months. So that was written before I was even born. But Campbell Morgan said, "Some are eager to talk of visions and revelations which they have had. The question is to whether such eagerness is not proof that the visions and revelations are not of the Lord. When they are granted, they produce a reverent awe. They are too solemn, too overwhelming to be lightly described or discussed, but the effect of them will be apparent in the life of all who serve and know the person." Paul didn't share it. It's interesting. No tape ministries, no cassettes floating around, no books, no talk shows, no magazines, no booked up on the banquet circuit for the next 30 years sharing his experience. He kept it to himself. But he does say, yes, there was a time and God spoke to me. This is very interesting because later on, Paul is going to focus in on this. "I will be careful to mention to you the areas in my life where His grace has met me the most in my weaknesses. In fact, His grace is more apparent in weaknesses than mountaintop experiences." Mountaintop experiences are good, but you see here, being left down out of the wall once in a garbage basket and then the next time being taken up into the third heaven. And all of these things are part of the Christian life. The ups and downs, the high experiences, the low. But he says, "I'm most interested for you to know where God's grace can be the best manifested in my experience in life. I want you to understand where God's grace is able to shine through me better. And it is not on the mountaintop. It is in my weaknesses. If you want me to boast," he said, "then let me boast of those infirmities and areas in my life that stick out, the rough edges where God's grace has come in and conquered. Then you know God's grace is working in my life." Now, the mountaintop experiences aren't wrong, but I am struck by the fact that he would not utter it, and he has never told us. In my today, what we have something different. I read just the other day one man you would know very well, and I'm not here to badmouth him, so I won't mention his name, has just recently seen a 900-foot living figure of Christ who spoke to him when he was in prayer. And the whole world knows about it already. And there have been people who have claimed to be gone to the dead. Some feel that Paul had actually died in his body and gone to heaven. I don't know. He doesn't say. In fact, Paul himself can't quite figure it out. But there are no bragging here. What I want you to know, he says, is this. That for God to be glorified, I want to show you how He can meet my needs and weaknesses. How His grace is made perfect in my weakness. How I learn about His love and His care mostly in my weakness. So he has a lot of... He's very careful not to give anybody a chance to glory in Him. He says this in verse 6. "For though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool, for I will say the truth. But now I forbear, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be or heareth of me. I'm going to be very careful, he said, because I don't want people to misunderstand. So he's very careful. It's one thing for us to share, I believe, how God meets our needs. And I don't think it's wrong to share. But there are some things, I believe, that we have to be very careful in. And here Paul is careful. I don't want anybody to think of me more highly than they ought to think. For anybody to think of me as being what I am not. This whole section is a very accurate description of the life of a servant of the Lord. Moments of deep humiliation, a mountaintop experience, and then a thorn in the flesh. Now, I mentioned this when I was giving a series on Abraham, and I'd like to repeat it. Normally, after we have enjoyed one of those exalted times with the Lord, He often allows us to suffer some kind of area in our lives that are going to show we're depending on Him. You see, Paul's going to heaven had not rid him of pride. Paul's having spoken directly with the Lord Jesus Christ hadn't rid him of pride because he needed a thorn in the flesh to keep him from being boastful. See? He needed a thorn in the flesh to keep him from bragging about it. And it's very interesting, isn't it? That revelation, that mountaintop experience did not purge out of him the sin nature. Our experiences are valid and our experiences are real. And experience is important. We need highs sometimes, or I don't think we'd make it. And yet, these highs are not a guarantee that God has purged us and cleansed us from all sin. In fact, we become vulnerable then to pride. And Paul says, therefore, verse 7, lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. So the divine revelations do not necessarily correct the flesh that is in us. Paul still had the old nature. He was in danger of falling into pride. And therefore, the enemy was working, and God used what the enemy did to bring glory. So this is some of the background of it. I appreciate Paul's attitude here. And so now Paul says, it seems to be very normal and obvious that when we have won some victory for the Lord, when we have gone through something that is special, that the enemy will come in and work at us, and that God will use that to His glory. And so Paul has mentioned this here. Very interesting. Now, what is the thorn in the flesh? Well, I really don't know. Some say he had an eye disease, which I tend to lean that way. He wrote at the end of the book of Galatians, he said, see, I sign this in what big letters I write with. He might have had a difficult seeing, or he might have had something wrong with that he could not coordinate his writing. Some have suggested that he suffered from migraine headaches. I know a missionary in South America, a very fine man, a graduate of Dallas Seminary, who suffers tremendous migraine headaches. And when they come, he just goes to bed. I'm no good, I can't do anything. He goes to bed for a day or two. When they're over with, he goes back to the Lord's work. And he's an outstanding man. And these things reoccur. Some say it was a problem of speech because they said, look at his speech. Can't even speak right when he gets up. He's not dignified, he's not refined. Maybe he stuttered a bit. But whatever the thorn of the flesh was, it was there to show God's grace. And I think the reason it is because no matter what comes up in our lives, we know that God's grace is sufficient. And God would say, no matter what it is, my grace would be sufficient. The first thing is that Satan would come in. Here's an opportunity of the enemy. Let's slow this guy down. Let's get at him. Let's make him hurt. He has just had a wonderful revelation. Let's come in and let's make him hurt now. So the enemy, Satan, was there to buffet. But God used the same thing to come in and strengthen Paul. Very interesting. Satan would hinder Paul's work, but God would use that to humble Paul and to teach him about his grace. And then Paul prayed about it. Three times, he said in verse 8. This thing I besought the Lord three times or thrice that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, and in verse 9 he said unto me, is an intense meaning. He is saying unto me, it is a message that it's still ringing in my ear. He is saying unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee. He prayed about it three times. And then the message came clear. There's a reason for this. In chapter 11 of this book, if you go back, Paul lays out all kinds of things he went through as an apostle. Verse 24, of 40 stripes I received save one, and I was beaten with rods, and once I was stoned, and three times I suffered shipwreck, and I spent a night and a day in the deep. I was in journeyings often, and in perils of waters, and dangers, and robbers on the way, and perils of my own countrymen, and perils of Gentiles, and in the city, and in the wilderness. And my in weariness, verse 27, and painfulness, and watchings, and in hunger, and in thirst, and in fasting, cold and nakedness. There were times when he was cold and he didn't have enough clothes, and he just went through all kinds of things for this. And then, this is interesting, because Paul learned that his grace was sufficient. All of these are part of my credentials, not only the revelation. All of these hungers and fastings and difficulties are as much a part of my life with the Lord as the mountaintop experience. Better than removing this thorn in the flesh, better than taking it away, God is going to use it to assure Paul of his strength to enable Paul. Rather than taking this thing away, he's going to teach Paul how to enjoy his grace in the midst of it. Rather than removing this and saying, you will not suffer it anymore, he lets Paul carry this so that Paul can learn and realize and understand how in the midst of problems, God's grace can be real to us. Now let me define grace for a little bit. Basically, the theological term is very simple. Unmerited favor. Love we cannot earn. Love we do not deserve. Something that we cannot gain through works. It is God's love showered upon us, given to us, and it is not anything that you and I could attract in ourselves. I have a definition. It is not theologically exact. But to me, grace, outside of the theological term, is a fresh start every day with God, a fresh beginning, a constant assurance that His love is available to us. Not depending upon where I am or what I'm doing or how high or how low, but the fact that every day His grace is available. In Romans 5:2, He talks about being introduced to a relationship of grace. And He says, wherein we stand, and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. In Romans 5:2, that in the original, it means we have been introduced into a face-to-face relationship of grace in which we presently stand and will continue to stand. I'm just taking the tenses of the words. In other words, we are in grace. We are always in grace. It's available to us forever. And so, grace is unmerited favor. It is love that is showed to us each day. Those of us who are believers have been introduced to this. The promise that is given here is that my grace is sufficient for thee, that my strength is made perfect in weakness, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. The promise here is for grace. The promise here is for strength. The promise here is for power. It is sufficient. It is what you need at this time. It is a thing that will meet your needs. Now, the purpose of the promise was to meet the needs in our lives. The nature of grace, you know, is to fill some kind of a vacancy in our lives. When we're weak, grace can give us strength. When we seem to be some deformity in our Christian character comes up, grace comes in to bring beauty and coordination and strength. When there's enmity in our heart, grace comes in and fills with love. Grace loves to come in and take something in our lives and fill that void and do something that we're not able to do. But notice it is in weakness where grace shines the brightest. It's when I am in need when it shines the brightest. I know that being in the Lord's work in Colombia and being at times in danger, I know that I was far more conscious of His presence when I was in danger. I was far more conscious of His power when I was in danger. I was far more conscious of His presence with me when I felt my life was threatened. I was far more conscious of His power when I had to get up and speak with no notice and everything was fouled up and I had to get up and just give it and everybody was waiting for me to deliver. And I was much more conscious of His grace toward me and His love toward me when I was in time of need. I was much more conscious of it when I was in the Lord's work and I couldn't understand the people because of my hearing. And yet somehow, in all of my groping with this, I was able to grasp what was being said and come up with some kind of word of wisdom that would help the people. That's when I was the most conscious of His presence in my life. So grace comes in and fills a void. And so Paul is talking about here, His grace is made perfect in weakness. His grace is manifest to make me strong. It is better known when I am weak than when I am strong. We shun difficulties. We shun problems. We shun hassles. We shun trials. And yet it is in these very things that God promises us that we will be strong and that He will perfect within us and mature within us a grasp of what His love is. The people who know the most of His love, the most of His grace, are those people who have been in some kind of situation where there's nothing to turn to but His grace. The fullness of this promise is that it is sufficient for all classes of needs. Now let me just touch briefly on some of these needs. Number one, for the would-be Christian. Maybe there's somebody here who really isn't a born-again believer. Perhaps your conscience has been awakened. You're beginning to become sensitive now that outside of this world around you there's another life. You're beginning to get conscious that God is dealing with you. But you look back in your life and you sort of feel, you wonder how He can do it. Maybe it's too late. Maybe I can't patch it up. Maybe there are things that are too far gone. You're struggling with this awakened conscience, seeking the Lord. But in the back of your mind, the enemy's there to tell you, hey, you know, you've given too much. You've blown too much. I would just say to you that His grace is sufficient. Salvation is by grace. Salvation is by grace through faith. No matter how numerous the sin, no matter how deep the problem, His grace is sufficient to meet that need. And so I would encourage you, if you're struggling with deep problems and you're wondering if God can accept you, for by grace are ye saved through faith. And His grace has been sufficient all the way through church history to save people. And it is sufficient today. His love can reach down and help you. And then there's the young Christian or the newer believer who is in need of God's grace. Now this person has just come out of Egypt. By Egypt we're talking in typology, we mean the world. He's just been delivered from the power of the world. Have you been in bondage and you know what sin has done and you know what denying the Lord has done and you've been freed from that? You've gone through a glorious redemption where you've crossed the Red Sea, so to speak. The world is behind you, but you're in the wilderness. And you get discouraged on the way. You know what the power of sin over you is, and you know what it's like to be delivered, but you get discouraged because you were shocked at the first reactions. You shared it with some of your relatives who weren't Christian, and instead of saying, wow, you cleaned up your life, they fought you. And it shocked you. How could they do this when I've arranged my life? I remember that shock coming to me. I was a bit of a troublemaker in and out. Nothing serious, but just a bit of a troublemaker. Unstable. When I got saved, I just was sure that people around me were going to jump up and down. Hey, he's got his getting things straightened out. Quite the contrary. What are you doing? Yeah, I'm glad you're going to church all the time now, but yeah, you're going to the wrong kind of church. See? And so on. And the shock hits you. Well, His grace is sufficient. He gave them what they needed in the wilderness. The manna every morning. When they were thirsty, He touched the rock and out gushed the living water. But His grace is sufficient for you who've just left Egypt, who are growing and learning, and you become weary with it. Oh, I know so little of the Scripture. I have so much to learn. How will I ever witness properly? How will I ever grow? How will I ever get over this thing? How will I ever reach this promised land of more mature Christian life? And it's dangerous because you can become weary in the wilderness. Many people drop out after a year or two. The weariness, the tediousness of mind and heart makes them drop out. So for the young believers, grace is sufficient. We've all gone through it. And let me encourage this. He knows and He understands and He can give you what you need as a brand new believer. Then there's the serving Christian. That brother or sister who's involved in God's work. And you know, Christian needs more grace to keep up his strength than the person who is idle. The active Christian needs this more than the idle person. Because the active Christian is faced with challenges. He's faced with misunderstandings. He's faced with serving the Lord and being involved in some activity. Maybe you're involved in the Lord's work here, in some area of activity. It means more time. It means you've got to take a couple hours extra during the week and study and prepare for your leaders or prepare for your Sunday school teachers. And you'd like to have a little bit more time. You feel your time is limited. You don't even have enough time for your family. The more active you are, the more grace you seem to need. And sometimes you're asked to serve and you're not psyched up for it. We all know what that's like. You're called now, you're on duty, you're supposed to do your job, and you're not in the mood for it. That happens, you know. Well, I have to go again tonight. And boy, today was a real bummer. How am I going to be up for it? His grace is sufficient. The more active our service, the more grace we need. In fact, when Christ says, take up your cross and follow me, I look at the cross as being the way God's grace was displayed. It is when Jesus Christ died on the cross and gave his life, and he said, it is finished, that God's grace was opened up to mankind. And the same thing with the believer who is serving. Take up your cross and follow me. His grace is manifest through that. It demands time, discipline, but His grace grips our heart. So for the serving or working brother or sister who find that they have to give just a little bit more time and a little bit more attention, or maybe they're open to just a little bit more criticism or whatever it might be, as you take up the cross God has given to you, it is through the cross that grace is made known. And so the serving Christian, His grace is sufficient. What you give up in time, He gives back to you in blessing in your heart. Then there's the tempted Christian. This is the person who maybe in his work or her work is constantly faced by a certain thing, a certain problem. It's not the job that's a problem. It may be the companion next to you that is a problem. But day in and day out, you have a hassle with this. Day in and day out, it's there picking away at you. You're tempted. Maybe you're tempted to depression. Maybe you're tempted to discouragement. When things don't go right and you look around, you're tempted to look down and say it'll never work out. Temptations come to us in many ways, in many forms. But for the tempted Christian, the one who is under the burdens and cares of this world, who is tempted at work, constantly facing the same thing, I know it will be there tomorrow, and I know I'm going to have to fight it, and I just wonder how I'm ever going to find the strength to constantly do this, because I cannot change my job, nor will he or she change their job. Well, there's victory in God's grace. His grace is sufficient. His grace reaches out right where you are and can capture your heart, and it is in the weaknesses where it's made known. Not the mountaintop experiences. It's in weaknesses. It's when I bring this whole thing to the Lord and lay it down and say, I can't do it anymore, I can't hack it anymore, where the grace of God is going to shine more brightly through you than one or two mountaintop experiences in your life. It's interesting what Paul is saying here, isn't he? For me to really taste God's grace, it wasn't really going to heaven and having that mountaintop experience. It was learning how to find His love sufficient for me in every situation of life. And then there's the suffering Christian. Maybe we're not saved from afflictions. We pray about things. But maybe He wants to save us in the midst of the affliction. Remember in Daniel, these youths were thrown in. God didn't spare them from being thrown into the furnace, but He saved them in it. In the midst of them, when they looked like they would be consumed by it, they found God's presence. There are burdens we all bear, difficulties, sufferings. We wonder why God doesn't take them away. David was anointed king as a young man. The throne would be his. It was guaranteed by God. Saul would be removed and you will be king. And yet David had to go through the valley of the shadow of death to get to the throne. He was pushed and hounded by Saul for years, threatened and in danger. And each time he found God able. And so for the suffering Christian, there's grace. He may not remove it. He didn't do it for Paul. But He gives us the grace in the trial to bear it. Someday my ears will be shut up. His grace has been sufficient, and they will be. His grace will be sufficient forever. So for the suffering Christian, he understands. There is grace unlimited. How about the backsliding Christian? Will he take me back? What I've done is, hey, wow. I'm his child, and I know what it's like to have fellowship. I know what it's like to be in his house. I know what it's like to be at the table of banquet and just be full and overflowing and rejoicing. But wow. Can he really take me back now? And you know what happens? It's usually our own thinking or some well-meaning Christian who might come to Ron and say, boy, I don't know, boy. No Christian has a right to judge that. Let God judge it. Let God decide. Remember the prodigal? The prodigal son was a son, wasn't he? And he left that house and he knew what it was like to have the comfort and joy and fellowship. And he went off and the next thing he's sitting in a pigsty eating with the animals. Glad to feed on their food. I'm going to go back. What was the attitude of the father? He saw him from afar, he ran through him, he put his arms around him, he fell on his neck, he kissed him, he embraced him, and then he put a feast on the table the likes that kid never saw before. And in fact, it irritated his other brother. You never treated me like that. Look, the grace has always been there, you've been living in my house. This one coming back. How can God take this person who's been a believer and fallen to the depths of sin and then shower such an abundant grace on him? That isn't even fair. I mean, after all, I haven't even felt that abundant grace. Well, God will do it. His restoring grace is limitless. Limitless. And so for the backsliding Christian, will he take you back? You bet your life he will. Just come on. Give him a chance. It's our minds that tell us, no, I've gone too far. It's ourselves who tell us this. How about the aged Christian? Or how about the dying Christian? The aged Christian who is finding that he or she cannot serve the way they did before. The body just doesn't work like before. The mind doesn't work. Hey, I tend to forget things. And I know an old preacher in Grand Rapids. And he's 85 years old. When he ministers, he sits down in a chair. Bring him up to there and they put him on the chair. I don't prepare new sermons anymore. He says, I can't even think straight. But he says, I got a file full of 45 years of sermons, and I'm not embarrassed to pull them out. I just can't study the way I did when I was a young person anymore. So I just pull them out of the file. What about this? We begin to lose our capacity. Is he sufficient? Can he still give us meaningful places in joy and peace and fullness of heart? Can he still give us a uniqueness in the body of Christ? He certainly can. And then the dying Christian, who looks now and in fear knows it's over with. Yeah, there's grace there too. To be absent from the body, to be present with the Lord. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. In every age of life, in every stage of life, in every challenge of life, in every trial of life, He is there. And His grace is sufficient. His love is there and available. His love reaches down to us and tells us that I can do something in a situation. And I'm always struck with this portion. I would rather glory in my infirmities. I would rather show somebody how God came into my weakness and conquered it, and how I'm able to go on, than talk about those mountaintop experiences that very often just put other brothers under bondage. Because they say, well, I'll never have that. And we run around, we try to have that. And that's why we've got all these movements going on today. Because we're all trying to climb somebody's mountain. And we're not doing it right. But hey, what about that thing of my life that's constantly after me? Constantly picking away at me, whether it's work or coming to Christ or whatever it is. What about that weakness? That's where God's grace shines out. When I see it come in and meet that need, what an exhilarating feeling. It's greater than the mountaintop experience to me. Greater than the mountaintop experience is that exhilarating feeling that comes when some sin or some habit has dragged me down, and then I get a taste of His grace and I'm free. That's exhilaration to me. Just knowing that I'm not in bondage anymore. His grace is sufficient. And so Paul said, well, I'll tell you about this experience. I was there. I won't tell you what it is, but I'll tell you this. It wasn't that experience that has shined and shown God's grace to me as much as it has been my infirmities. As much as it has it been my weaknesses, my difficulties. His love is available. In every stage of life, at every age of life, in every area of service, in everything that He has for us, it's available.